The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, and we're back in the studio here at Edstone. Hopefully you had a great Thanksgiving, those of you who, especially those in the United States, but any around the world who were celebrating that yesterday. Yesterday we had a great show from Mr. Andrew Loker, covering from Edmund over there, getting up early in the morning, talking about Thanksgiving. But also, especially at the start, with just a wealth of information about the church that's behind this program and this radio station. So if you're interested in our organization and some of our other activities, that's a great show to listen to. He also had a lot on the history of Thanksgiving, which is something we'll get into a little bit in the second half of the program, if we have time. But I wanted to get into a bit of news first. And for our regular listeners, I'm sure you're aware that one of the top things we're looking at in the news right now is Germany and the coalition negotiations over there. And again, for our regular listeners, I'm sure that's something you're eager for updates on. It's something that's very important. And if you're not one of our regular listeners, we'll get into why that's so important in just a little bit. But the big news from the last couple of days over Thanksgiving, is that now another coalition option may be opening up for Ms. Merkel. So to recap the events of the last few months, you had the German election. After the election, Angela Merkel, there was no easy coalition. Her preferred coalition partners didn't get enough votes, and she didn't get enough votes for them to be able to form a coalition. So then they entered into this Jamaica coalition, this very awkward coalition with a whole load of different parties, and the negotiations for that collapsed on Sunday. And since then, there's been a whole load of uncertainty in Germany. Now, you may recall that before the elections back in September, Germany had been ruled by a coalition between the Social Democrats and Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union and the sister party, the Christian Social Union. So it was a coalition between the main right-wing party and the main left-wing party, centre-right and centre-left, working together in the coalition. And then the SDP had a terrible election. They had their worst results since World War II. And the coalition was a good chunk of the reason why. A lot of the voters decided, well, if I vote for the Social Democrats on the centre-left, I get Angela Merkel, who's on the right. You know, I voted for a left-wing party that ends up supporting a right-wing government. I don't want that. I want a left-wing party. And so they shifted parties further to the left, abandoning the Social Democrats. And so after the election, well, the most straightforward coalition would have been yet another left-right coalition, another coalition between the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats. Now, and they wouldn't have had as strong of a majority as they had before the election, but those two parties combined still had a majority. And that's just two parties. It would be much easier than the Jamaica coalition. But after the Social Democrats just saw themselves got wiped out after that last coalition, they said no. They said, we have no interest in repeating that coalition. We got really badly hurt at the ballot box. We're not going to go through that again. We'll sit this one out. We're not going to be part of government. And then we're going to focus on getting strong votes and winning back those votes to our party at the next election. And you can see why they made that decision. They would have been worried that if they agreed to a coalition, the next time in an election, they would get massacred. You know, they could probably even be relegated to one of Germany's minor parties had they chosen to stay in coalition again. That would have been the risk. Their survival as Germany's main left-wing party is at stake here, because if they had another shrink in votes like the one they had last time around, well, then they may no longer be the main left-wing party. The Green Party could even overtake them. So the stakes were very high. But now the Social Democrats' position might be changing. They're now the party that could save Germany from chaos and uncertainty the way many see it. And so the Social Democrats have now said they're reconsidering their position. They're saying, well, they might either agree to support an Angela Merkel minority government. I guess that would be something similar to confidence and supply arrangements in the UK politics, where they would agree to back them in votes of confidence. So they could prop up a Merkel minority government or even go into coalition with Angela Merkel again. They're saying, well, they might do that now. So what would happen given this latest news? And so, well, yesterday was the leaders of the Social Democrats got together and they had a discussion long into the night. And the news from that is they're definitely thinking about looking at going into coalition with Angela Merkel. If they move forward that, well, what does that mean? Does that mean problem solved? This political crisis that we've been talking about in Germany all week, that's over? Over and done with? We're good now? Well, that's the way a lot of people see it. This development occurred in the same time that there's just been an outbreak of optimism in a lot of the media. There's more and more articles saying, well, no, it's too strong to call this a political crisis in Germany. Really, everything's fine. This is just the democratic process working as normal. So there was Monday, Tuesday, I think there was just a real sense of panic in a lot of European media. And now you're seeing more and more articles saying, well, actually, no, it's fine. Deutsche Welle, for example, they had an article titled Angela Merkel's German coalition crisis greatly exaggerated. And they quoted the now he's the parliamentary leader for Merkel's Christian Democrats, Wolfgang Schäuble. And he said it's a test, but not a crisis of state. Now, this article is coming from the same news organization that said hardly anyone could have imagined the talks to form a new German government would collapse. So they don't necessarily have the greatest track record in terms of forecasting German elections. I think that obviously mars their credibility. You know, it should not have been a huge surprise at all that those coalition negotiations fell apart. Those parties had no incentive to compromise and they were from all over the political spectrum. I think anyone that just even had an ounce of what they're talking about with the German politics shouldn't have been surprised by that. So I think it says something about their organization that they were. But they're not the only ones saying this. This is a quote from the Financial Times yesterday. If you believe the headlines, the failure of the Chancellor's Christian Democrats and their Bavarian sister party, the CSU, to strike a deal with the economically liberal Free Democrats and the leftish Greens has plunged the nation into crisis. So if you believe the headlines, you believe Germany is in crisis, this writer at the Financial Times said. But they go on to say, no one has told the well-heeled Christmas shoppers crowding Berlin's stores. Wages are high, unemployment is low, the government is awash with cash. Crisis, Germans are asking? What crisis? Now, I don't know how many Germans are asking that, but certainly a lot, and certainly a lot in the media. Now, that's a very surface look. They're looking at what's going on right now, and you can see, based on a surface look, why they're saying that. There are a lot of things going very well for Germany right now. He goes on to talk about in that article, if anything, Germany has more money than it says it does. Most nations are getting deeper and deeper into debt, borrowing more money, more and more money each year. Germany's the opposite way. They're saving more and more money each year. And he talked about, well, actually, Germany's probably bringing, or at least saving as in not going deeper into debt. I think they still have debt, but they're paying that debt off. They're generating a surplus of income. They're bringing in more money in taxes than they're spending. And he goes on to talk about, well, if anything, they're bringing in even more money than they claim they are. They're just trying not to make the other nations of Europe that are deeply in debt look so bad. But that's a surface look. It's looking at how things are just exactly now. And I want to spend a bit of time talking about this because I think, you know, this is what could very well happen now with the possibility of negotiations with the Social Democrats opening up is, well, this is something that could take some time. The Social Democrats could even take a few weeks deciding whether they want to go into coalition negotiations or not. And we'll talk about that more in a moment in the process there. And then if those negotiations start, they could go on for a while. And so the Germany story could well be about to disappear from your headlines now. at the very least for a week or two, but perhaps even for a few weeks or longer. And with all these articles like crisis greatly exaggerated, crisis, what crisis, it'd be very easy to start to think it's gone away, it's fixed, or that there's no real crisis here. Everything is back to being fine within Germany. And as these articles disappear from the headlines, I think that's the impression a lot of people are going to get. And I think over the next week or two, people will start to forget about this story now. Or there's that danger anyway. Obviously, there is still very much the potential for dramatic things to happen, and things could, the Social Democrats could easily pull out of even considering these negotiations, just even at the drop of the hat. But there certainly is the potential for this story to start to go away. And the news media are certainly saying, or some of the news media are certainly saying, everything is fine. You don't need to worry about what's going on in Germany. This is just politics as usual. So that's why I really want to take some time today to really show why this is wrong. Now, the approach that the German media are taking, thinking about that, it reminds me of a story from Mr. Armstrong's autobiography that was just a really good analogy that he used in there that really applies to this. And he was talking about how it was at some kind of business conference. I didn't get a chance to look out the exact story, so I'm having to do it from memory. But he went to some kind of business conference, and there was a speaker there who said there was going to be an economic crash, a financial crash. And he said that the audience laughed at him or ridiculed him because everything looked great. And they were saying, yeah, that's ridiculous. There's not going to be a crash. The next time he spoke, there had been a crash. He had been proved right. And the speaker explained how he was able to forecast that. And he talked about how, well, if you want to know what the temperature is right now in a room inside a building, well, you can get a thermometer out and you can know what the temperature is right now in that building. But that tells you nothing about what the temperature is going to be. What it's going to be, say, in the night, what it's going to be a bit further on. To do that, he said, you have to go and you have to look at the boiler room. You have to go and look at the workings of the heating system. And so all those in the hall that laughed at that economist, they were looking at the thermometer, looking at indications of what the conditions are at that moment. Whereas the economist was going to the boiler room. He was getting to the root causes, the foundation of the issues, understanding the workings of the heating system in that analogy. And that's what we've got to do with Germany. Those journalists that are saying, well, look, everything is fine. Look at how many Germans are going Christmas shopping. There's no crisis. How could there be a crisis when the Christmas markets are so full? How could this be a political crisis? The economy is prospering. Germany's bringing in more money in taxes than it's spending. How can there be any kind of crisis? They're looking at the thermometer. They're looking at things right now. And we've got to look deeper to understand what's going on in Germany. So I want to start with a couple of points on why that rosy picture is wrong. And my first point is that the talks with the Social Democrats could just end up delaying things further. So talks with the Social Democrats are, as we've been saying, far, far from a done deal. And in fact, the Social Democrats, where they are now, is they are deciding if they want to begin explanatory talks about eventually beginning coalition talks. So we are a long, long way from having a Social Democrat, Christian Democrat coalition. And remember, there are serious downsides and risks to the Social Democrats if they go through with this. Their survival as Germany's main left-wing party is on the line. If they mess this up, they could find themselves no longer Germany's top left-wing party. The people doing this negotiation, those individuals, would probably find themselves out of a job and never having another shot at being the German Chancellor or about having positions in German government. You're talking about the end of people's political careers for those right at the top of this party. That's what's at risk. So it's not going to be easy for them going forward on this. And those risks are bigger than they are for any typical negotiations or just career in politics right now. Remember, the Social Democrats have just gone through their worst election since World War II. So they are in their party is in an historic crisis. So that really puts the pressure on those leaders. So those party leaders, they made that they could themselves decide to begin negotiations or to not begin negotiations. They have that power. Because this could be so controversial, a lot of people think they'll pass that decision on to the party members, to their supporters. They don't want to be accused of going into coalition against the wishes of those supporters. And so they could go and get the opinion of their supporters. They have a party conference coming up in the beginning of December. And so there's a good chance, there's a strong possibility they could let the party members make their opinions known at that conference. Or there's the alternative, they could put it to a vote of the members and have a voting process that goes on over the next couple of weeks. But in those cases, you're looking at the Social Democrats taking at least another couple of weeks to decide if they want to begin explanatory talks towards eventually beginning coalition talks. And so they could easily end up saying, well, actually, no, we don't want to begin these coalition explanatory talks. And we may not even have that decision until December. So there is the very real chance that all this news about coalitions with the Social Democrats does is just bump the time schedule up another month or another couple of weeks, push back or just extend the amount of time Germany's stuck sitting without a government yet further. Now, if they're going to decide to go ahead and go through these talks, begin these explanatory talks, and then even actual coalition talks, there's still no guarantee that these are going to succeed. Remember, they're going, as I said, into these talks into tough conditions. They have to come out of these talks with a much better deal than they got in previous coalitions, than they got after last election. Because again, if they don't, they're toast. Their party could lose its position as the main left-wing party, politicians' careers ruined, etc. And at the same time, though, German Chancellor Angela Merkel is going to be under a lot of pressure to fight for her career, too. People are saying, well, is she going to survive? Meanwhile, the Christian Social Union, they're under threat as being the just really dominant party in Bavaria. And if they give too much ground, they've got Bavarian elections coming up in next year. They're looking at, so they're all the time in these negotiations, they've got that. Not even in the back of their mind, probably even in the front of their mind, these are coming up. And the majority would be slim enough between CSU, CDU, the Social Democrats and the Christian Democrats, that the CSU in Bavaria could make a real difference in parliament. They would give them a much, much greater sway than perhaps they had in the last election, where they just weren't as needed. Their votes weren't needed so much to gain a majority. So there's going to be still a lot of pressure on these different parties and a lot of pressure on them not to compromise. And so the Social Democrats could well just end up walking out of coalition negotiations in exactly the same way that the Free Democrats ended up walking out of these coalition negotiations on Sunday. And if that happens, well, that could be January, maybe even February. And then they walk out of coalition negotiations, they collapse, new elections are called, maybe for, that would be like March or April. And now you're starting to get the prospect of, well, then after those elections, there'd be new coalition negotiations, which would then probably drag on into summer. And you're just getting this, all this news could end up doing is just dragging on this coalition negotiation out further. Now, even in the best case scenario, though, they get a government together. These two parties agree. Is that all sorted for Germany's political crisis? Is that done? Checkmark? Finished? Problem solved? Well, again, no. The Social Democrats suffered so much at the ballot box because of this assumption that they didn't do anything in government, that they made no difference, that Angela Merkel just kind of did exactly what they wanted, and the Social Democrats did nothing to try and stop things that they didn't like, or they did nothing to put forward ideas of their own. That's the perception of a lot of people, a lot of their own voters. And so those voters thought, well, what's the point in voting for Social Democrats if once they get into coalition, they just let Angela Merkel do whatever she wants? there's no point. We might as well just go and vote for the Green Party or the Left Party. And that's what a lot of people did. So if the Social Democrats end up actually in government again this time, that's what they're going to have to fix. And again, their survival as Germany's main left-wing party on the line here. They desperately need to avoid the perception that, well, they don't do anything, that a vote for the Social Democrats is just as good as a vote for Angela Merkel. They need to make it obvious that they're making a difference. They need to make it obvious that they're pulling Angela Merkel to the left, that they're blocking things that she tries to do that are too right-wing. That means standing up to her. That means much more coalition friction. Angela Merkel's had two coalition governments with the Social Democrats, and overall, I think they've gone fairly smoothly. But this time round, if it even gets to the point of having that coalition, it would have to be different. So it would be a much more unstable government, even at that point, with still the threat of the government falling apart at any time. So nothing gets fixed from this point out. Any of these options still leaves Germany in a lot more uncertainty and with a lot more unstable government than it had before the election. And that brings us to the second reason why these complacent articles are wrong. And that is that the current political crisis is a symptom of even deeper problems in Merkel. And so, I mean, or even more deeper problems in Germany. The current political crisis is a symptom of even deeper political problems in Germany. Or even deeper problems in Germany, not just political ones. Now, the more astute commentators see this. There are some, but there's a lot that don't. Too many just take the view that, well, the election threw up an awkward result. But if we can find exactly the right compromise necessary to get a coalition together, well, then we would have solved it. That'll be fixed. We'll have got through it. You know, it's going to be difficult. It will require somebody with really good negotiation skills. But if Angela Merkel has good enough negotiation skills, then we're done. It's not a crisis. It's just something that requires a highly skilled negotiator and exactly the right compromises. But what this approach really misses, and this is the approach that those who say, well, everything's fine in Germany, what it takes, but what it misses is why. Why was this awkward coalition result? Why was there no clear winner of Germany's last election? I've quoted George Friedman, the founder of Geopolitical Futures, on this a few times, because he really does see this very clear, and he has some excellent analysis. I'll just read a bit from what he wrote. It was actually over a year ago, September 2016, about the elections about regional elections in Berlin. And he got to the cause of why. He gets to at least a good chunk of the boiler room, say, in this article. And we'll see just how accurately that enabled him to predict what's been going on in Germany. Now, Bible prophecy helps us do this even more, predict even more accurately and further range into the future. But this is just a great example of the logical analysis that more journalists should really be capable of, and more would be if they had a better knowledge of history. And if they did that, you'd have fewer of these articles saying, well, everything's fine in Germany. So this is that article. He says, my apologies for constantly returning to Germany, but for the moment, it is the pivot of the world. Germany is the fourth largest economy in the world, the largest economy in Europe, the lender of last resort, and the foundation of European stability. If Germany weakens or destabilizes, Europe destabilizes. And it is not too extreme to say that if Europe destabilizes, the world can as well. I am confident in saying I am not making too much of a small thing. This is a big deal. And we've seen and we've read a few articles talking about that over the last week or so on this program, on Trumpet Hour, on Wednesday's show, about how people are looking at what's happening in Germany and saying, well, Europe needs a strong Germany. We can't get anything done without them. Then he goes through these particular election results from Berlin that were a little similar to the election results that Germany had for the whole nation in September. The Berlin results were even more fragmented. They did give the main parties got even fewer votes than they did in the actual elections, but it's the same pattern. And he wrote, in other words, the electorate in the Berlin region is completely fragmented. In that particular election, he writes, the mainstream SDP and CDU together got a little over a third of the vote. He says, Berlin does not represent all Germany, but it is the capital. Therefore, the fact that the mainstream parties were together repudiated by the majority of voters is significant. In Berlin, at least, the German political system has shattered. And you're looking at something close to that all across Germany. Now, I think that those two parties, those two mainstream parties all across Germany, they did manage to get a little above 50% in the federal elections, but not that much. And it was their worst combined vote in Germany's post-war history. So they're really coming under pressure all across Europe. And that would be, I mean, all across Germany. And that if there was a fresh election, there would be a real chance of, just like in Berlin, these two mainstream parties being repudiated by the majority of voters. And certainly it's very close to happening. He writes that if the Berlin results are replicated on a national level, Germany is going to become ungovernable. And again, we see a Germany close to that point. We've talked about all the different scenarios, how there doesn't seem like a good way out here because Germany is close to becoming ungovernable. He says that he puts in a few caveats and things about the next election. And he said that this result, taken at face value, indicates that the European foundation Germany is moving towards a major political crisis that will resonate. The migration issue is obviously a major factor, but in the end, the economy is even more important, he writes. Then he goes off and he talks in great detail about the economy, about the, how there are, even though there are a lot of things going really well in Germany, there are some big economic risks and there's a lot that those responsible for exports are prospering. But what about the ordinary German? So he goes into that for a while. And then towards the conclusion, he comes back to these election results and writes, when you consider the fact that the results of the Berlin election look like someone smashed a plate on the floor with support for the various parties fragmenting into pieces, it is clear something is being felt on the ground. He writes that, in my view, there is a growing sense in Germany that the German system is failing. And he's right. And some of those journalists, like the one writing for the Financial Times, may not see it. But you look at where the voters are voting, and there is this growing sense that the system is failing. He said, but the tremors are now being felt by the finest financial analysts in the world, ordinary people who work for a living and need their paychecks to survive. The political base of modern Germany is crumbling. And as in Britain with Brexit, it will be dismissed as the work of irresponsible proles. So that's what's happening in Germany. That's what's behind the election result. The political base of modern Germany is crumbling. That's why it's not just a case of getting the perfect compromise together and everything is fine. That's why we can't just look at all of the masses of Germans in their Christmas markets and say, there's nothing to worry about. More and more people are seeing it, at least partly this way. Spiegel today had an article, a very dramatic one as well, talking about, I think it was called something like the German election results and the end of history. I didn't note down the exact title. But this article states, after the collapse of communism in 1989, Francis Fukuyama wrote The End of History, by which he meant the triumph of Western values. Soon the entire world would be democratized. The victorious political order seemed clear. How absurd that worldview seems now in November 2017. And they're absolutely right. This article goes on to write, since September 2001, the West has made a number of missteps. There were the aimless interventions in Iraq, Afghanistan and Libya. There was the self-inflicted economic crisis of 2008, which was actually not a global disaster, but a transatlantic one, as China, Indonesia and India all continued to grow. For too many years, we have clearly demonstrated to non-democratic states that democracy may no longer be reliable and is far too fragile. And this is the trend. This is a trend that our latest Trumpet magazine, which you can read online now at the website, gets into. This move away from democracy and towards strongmen. This article goes on to write, what country would look to today's United States as an example? Which brings us to Germany, the stable center of Europe. Now, before that he gets into that, he says it must first be said that the government crisis, which has arisen out of the failed coalition talks, is not a crisis of state, at least not yet. And that's fair enough. If you were describing how things are right now, I guess that would be, I could see that being correct. But then he talks about how German politics are not as stable as we could think, as people like to think, about how this could very easily become a major crisis of state. He writes that the idea that democracy was somehow the end point of development was megalomaniac. As long as there is something to redistribute, every system has it easy. But in the past 11 years, freedom around the world has receded. Of 195 states, only 87 are still free, 59 are partially free, and 49 are not free at all, according to the NGO Freedom House. Turkey and Russia have turned their backs on the group of democracies, while Poland and Hungary are not far behind. Meanwhile, the United States is floundering. One would hope that should be enough to focus minds in Berlin. There is, after all, a lot at stake. This author sees that it's German democracy that's at stake here. So some are looking at this more deeply, putting this in context with what's going on with the rest of the world. And you do that and you can't just brush this aside and say everything is fine. Trumpet.com managing editor Brad McDonald, he talked about this in his quick update on the negotiations on Wednesday. You can watch the full clip on our website. It's our regular This Week in Germany feature where we have about a 5-minute video explaining the news from Germany. But here's just a quick clip from that, talking about this political crisis in Germany.
And this leads me to my fourth observation, which is that this political crisis in many ways really is a distraction from a much deeper national crisis. Germany, let's not forget, is in this position politically because the German people in last September's election expressed enormous disdain for mainstream politics and the mainstream political parties. The German public is unhappy and fearful and anxious. This political crisis is simply a symptom of a much more worrying problem. And this is the issue that we're really focused on here at The Trumpet. Conditions in Germany right now are ripe for the emergence of extreme politics, more extreme ideologies, and leaders and political parties endorsing some extreme solutions. This is what Bible prophecy tells us we can expect. It's also what history tells us we can expect.
So you can watch the full clip of that on our website, about 5 minutes long, but that was the fourth point in there, as he said, that's what we're really locked in on. That's what we're really focusing on. This is a symptom of a far deeper crisis. And to understand that, you've got to look at why people are abandoning the mainstream parties, why they're voting for more and more extreme parties, that there is this growing dissatisfaction with all the mainstream parties, the mainstream leaders, the mainstream way of doing politics, even democracy itself. You see this especially in Eastern Germany, which tends to be poorer than the West. The Left Party, they're a radical group. They're less, you know, everyone talks about the Alternative for Deutschland, and yet the rise of the Alternative for Deutschland is a big deal. The Left Party, there's probably even more extreme left than the AfD is right. They are the successors to the East German Communist Party, that absolutely brutal and murderous regime. And when you look at East Germany, 40% voted for one of these two extreme parties, either the Left Party on the fringe left or the AfD on the fringe right. 40% voted for these two extreme parties. East Germany tells you these things are going to get worse. That's what's coming to West Germany as there are economic problems. That's what's coming if there are more problems just hitting the world, global financial crises, terrorism, etc. Unless people are getting safer, richer, more prosperous, that's what's coming. 40% are voting for parties outside of the political norm, parties that the other political parties won't work with. You know, how does politics function? In order to have a coalition that has a majority, you basically need every other party that's not one of these extreme parties to come together in a coalition. You know, 40% are extreme and you're not going to work with either of those parties. It basically requires everybody else to work together. And that's just a hopeless coalition. It can't accomplish anything. This is exactly how democracy died in the 1930s. Exactly what happened. You had fascist parties and communist parties taking up such a large percentage of the votes that no mainstream party could govern on their own or in a stable coalition. They had to reach across the aisle to form these big, grand coalitions with left and right, and they didn't work. And then it just led to the extreme parties gaining more and more votes until either the whole political system collapsed or one of the extreme parties took over. We're seeing history repeat itself, and that is very frightening history to be repeating itself. So you do get a very different picture when you look beneath the surface of what's happening here. That's why we can't look at the Christian Democratic Union's negotiations with the Social Democrats and say, oh, good, you know, those two parties, they're going to talk together, get it sorted out, everything's hunky-dory. We're all fine. Now, the Bible tells us where this is leading, and we can see that building. We can see it building towards that destination already. But we'll look at a few scriptures from the Bible to show where this is coming, where this is leading. Now, we went into a lot of these in more detail in the previous Trumpet print, not the one that's right there on the website right now, but the issue before then with the German election earthquake on the front cover and an article, Wanted, a Leader for Germany. So you can go and look that up for more proof of what I'm talking about today in terms of these prophecies. But we'll still look at a few. We'll look at Daniel chapter 11. It's a key prophecy about what we're expecting. And here the Bible talks about what's coming to Germany, what's coming to Europe, and how that's going to come about. Daniel chapter 11 and verse 21 says, "And in his estate shall stand up a vile person, who they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries." So it's talking about someone that takes over a kingdom. Now, as I said, we went into more detail on this in the last trumpet, but what is this talking about? Well, the short answer is that Jesus Christ referenced this passage in Matthew 24 and Matthew 24 and verse 15 when he was talking about things to watch at the time of the end. And what we see here is a remarkable prophecy that describes a king that ruled around in the region of Syria in around 150 BC called Antiochus Epiphanes. It's a prophecy that describes him so accurately that the critics don't even dispute that this is describing Antiochus Epiphanes. They simply try to argue that the book of Daniel is a forgery and written after the fact. There's abundant proof that it's not, but that's the only way they can try and explain away this prophecy here. But in Matthew 24, Christ tells us that this isn't just ancient history about Antiochus Epiphanes. This also has a modern fulfillment. There's a modern Antiochus coming. And this verse that we just read in Daniel 11 and verse 21 tells us how this modern Antiochus will come to power. The European people shall not give this Antiochus, this modern Antiochus, the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. The Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary says, "The nation shall not by a public act confer the kingdom on him, but he shall obtain it by artifice, by flattering, by acts of cunning." Barnes notes on the Old Testament states, "In other words, it should not be conferred on him by any law or act of the nation or in any regular succession or claim." Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry wrote, "The man doesn't come to power the honorable way by being voted into office. He takes it dishonorably. He'll work behind the scenes and come to power by flatteries, not votes." Now, an unstable government or complicated coalition negotiations provide the perfect opportunity for this to happen. And this is something Mr. Flurry talked about in a Key of David program a few years ago. We've played this clip before, but we'll just play it again for you quickly now.
Now, he's not going to come in by, let's say, a democratic process. He's going to come in and use flatteries and sort of tweak the democratic process. It says here something like that, and perhaps take advantage of a weak coalition, but he's going to come in by flatteries.
He's going to come in by flattery, perhaps take advantage of a weak coalition. And that's where we're headed, either complicated coalition negotiations that just drag on and on, or a weak coalition. And you can see exactly how this could play out, how the need for a strong man, given what is happening in Europe, is going to just build and build. The conditions are there perfectly. And you can see this again just from the news media. On Wednesday, Mr. McDonald had the trumpet brief, and this email that we send out to around 20,000 people. We're picking up, I think, nearly 200 new subscribers each week at the moment. You can sign up to that. Just go to our website, thetrumpet.com, and it contains a digest of all the news that we have on the website and a personal message from one of our writers. And this was from Mr. McDonald on that on the Wednesday's one. And he writes, "It's always interesting to me when Germans express concern about their nature and their proclivity for violence when under pressure. This article from The Guardian posted today contains a few examples. One German, a retired farmer, stated, 'You just cannot trust the Germans, as history has shown. I think they are the most intelligent sheep in the world. I constantly worry what Germany might unleash on the world, particularly with Britain leaving the EU, which just gives Germany more power in Europe. And I fear what might happen in this climate, in this current climate of uncertainty, if Merkel is unseated.'" That is Daniel 11 and 21, you know, leaping off the page, about to be fulfilled. You can see so clearly how that could happen. Mr. McDonald goes on to write, "This man is not on our staff. He doesn't write for a British or American newspaper. He isn't a World War II veteran or a Jew who lost ancestors in the Holocaust or a Frenchman with memories of being invaded by the Germans. He's a retired farmer, a regular German." He goes on to write, "Samihi Baghdadi doesn't appear to be German, but she lives in Germany. She told The Guardian, 'At least under Merkel, I think the country is polite and decent, though I fear the powers working behind the scenes, and I fear who might govern Germany if she's no longer in power. We've seen what happens in the US and how people's language and behavior is being shaped by Donald Trump. Well, I fear a German Trump, or worse. I think people are susceptible to that. And she's right. That's what, if you have a good understanding of German history and German politics right now, that's what you see. And that's exactly what the Bible talks about. That's what these events are all building towards. Mr. Armstrong talked about this coming strongman of Germany for years. You've heard some of the sound bites on this program over the last week or so. We can look just quickly at a few scriptures that talk about this individual, about what he'll do. I mean, we read Daniel 11 talking about him coming to power. We can just look quickly in Daniel chapter 8, another scripture describing exactly the same man. It says, "And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy might wonderfully and shall prosper and practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy, he shall also cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart. He shall stand..." We'll stop there for now. So another scripture in Daniel, we can look at... Isaiah, there's tons of scriptures that talk about this individual, but we'll just look at some of the highlights, or just some of the main ones. Mr. Armstrong always used to say, "Don't believe me, believe your Bible." So we'll look at a few just to show that there are so many of these prophecies talking about this strong man. Isaiah chapter 10, and this, it was talking in part, in type, about Assyria anciently, and part of this was fulfilled anciently, just like Daniel 8 was talking about in part an ancient Antiochus Epiphanes. But you can read from the rest of the chapter, there's prophecies that have not yet been fulfilled. And so the full fulfillment of this doesn't come until this modern time. But it says here, "O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger, the staff in their hand is mine indignation. I will send him, an individual strong man, against a hypocritical nation, against the people of my wrath. Will I give him a charge to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets? Howbeit he means not so, neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few." We'll look at just one more example of this in Habakkuk chapter 1. And just like Assyria attacking ancient Israel was a type of this modern man, so was Babylon attacking Judah, Babylon and Chaldea. And so this talks about the Chaldeans, but again, it's referring to the same man. And you can read again the same prophecies there to see that this isn't that this was not completely fulfilled anciently. There's a modern part of this that is yet to happen. But Habakkuk chapter 1 says, "For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans," this is 1 and verse 6, "that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards. They're more fierce than the evening wolves." Then verse 9 says, "They'll come up all for violence." But let's look in verse 11. "Then shall his mind change." So there's one man, a king, that leads them. "And he shall pass over and offend, imputing this power unto his God." So there are so many prophecies of this strong man coming. And we can see these prophecies building right now, events building towards this man. But notice something else also in all of these scriptures that we've turned to. We'll start with Daniel chapter 8 again. Just go back to Daniel chapter 8 and verse 25 and read the end of that verse where we stopped. It says, "He shall also stand up against the prince of princes and shall be broken without hand." So Daniel chapter 8 talks about this strong leader standing up to Jesus Christ himself and being broken without hand, being destroyed. We can look at Isaiah chapter 10 again. And we can read about all of his destruction. And then verse 16, "Therefore shall the Lord of hosts, send among his fat ones leanness. Under his kindling, under his glory shall he burn a kindling, burning like the fire. And the light of Israel shall be for a fire, and the Holy One for a flame. And it shall burn and devour his thorns and briars in that day." And then verse 21 talks about a remnant of Israel returning, a remnant of Jacob, unto the mighty God. And then verse 24 says, "Therefore thus says the Eternal of hosts, O my people that dwell in Zion, be not afraid of the Assyrian. He shall smite you with a rod, he shall lift up his staff against you after the manner of Egypt. For yet a little while, and the indignation shall cease, and mine anger in their destruction." And it talks about how exactly he'll be brought down and destroyed. And then verse 11 goes on to give this prophecy, or the next chapter, chapter 11, goes on to talk about Jesus Christ ruling the earth and the conditions of peace with him ruling the earth. So again, we look, Daniel chapter 8 describes this strong man being destroyed by Jesus Christ. Isaiah 10 says the same thing and goes on to talk about Jesus Christ ruling the earth. You see the same in Habakkuk 2 and verse 14, which says, "For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Eternal, as the waters cover the sea." So we see all of these almost scary descriptions of this strong man. But all of those same chapters also talk about, or at least those same passages, talk about the end of this strong man, say that this strong man is destroyed by Jesus Christ personally. Then that right after that, there's this time when the earth is covered with the knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea, that Jesus Christ himself personally stops that man. So as we see conditions leading to that man in Germany, as we see just all the stage set for that man to arrive in Germany, well, we're seeing the stage almost being set for the stage set for Jesus Christ to return as well. And for that, just that beginning of that wonderful world tomorrow. Well, we'll take a very quick break, and after that, we'll use the time remaining to talk very little bit about Thanksgiving.
This is KPCG FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Now, I have in my notes that we've just spent the first half talking about German politics. I think that stretches the definition of half beyond its tolerance limits. But we did. It was Thanksgiving yesterday, so I will use a little bit of the program to talk about that. Now, you may be thinking, well, what's a Brit going to be doing talking about Thanksgiving? And yes, we don't do Thanksgiving Day in the United Kingdom, but apparently we do Black Friday. When I wrote my notes together, it was a couple of days ago, I said that I'd done a quick search through my inbox and had found that over the last fortnight I'd received 50 emails offering me Black Friday deals. Now it's probably closer to 100 of all these different Black Friday deals. And at least that I've noticed, and when I searched through when I was writing this, I don't think I've received any marketing emails talking at all about Thanksgiving. And it says something about modern Britain. We have Black Friday, and we don't have Thanksgiving. You could go out onto the streets, and probably anyone out there could tell you what Black Friday is, and they could tell you because just about every storefront has Black Friday in big letters written on it. But the odds are they probably haven't heard of Thanksgiving, unless they have spent a lot of time in the US. Now, you may think that's because these national days of Thanksgiving are not part of Britain's history, but that's not true. Britain has had days of Thanksgiving. Mr. Loker, he covered some of the history of Thanksgiving in yesterday's Trumpet Daily Radio show, and he talked about how there were these Thanksgiving days in Europe, even before the United States with the Pilgrim Fathers. We have a video on our website. We have articles talking about America's history with these national days of prayer, national days of Thanksgiving. And Britain has that history too. We've just forgotten it. And some of the best examples of this come from World War II, something that's not that long ago. And a while ago, I was looking up in some newspaper archives about some of these days of prayer and days of Thanksgiving. And to me, it really was a revelation. These are newspaper articles that are not that long, 70 years or so, in the grand scheme of things, not that long ago. And I was being introduced to a Britain that's just so completely alien to anything I've ever experienced in my life. There were just articles by regular journalists talking about prayer, talking about miracles, acknowledging God. There were editorials, the editorial board of things like the Times magazine, exhorting British people to pray, to get behind these days of prayer and Thanksgiving. And you never see anything remotely close to that now. There were days where all the shops were shut and the newspapers and everybody was all getting behind, was encouraging people to, at noon, all pray to God at the same time. And businesses were shut so everybody could go to church. As I said, that's just completely different to the country I've been used to. A lot of this history came from 1940, from the Dunkirk evacuations, and I had planned to get into this a little bit more, but I think many of our listeners are aware of what happened at Dunkirk. Britain's army, about 250,000 men, were stuck on the continent of Europe, stuck in France, trying to get out, and Britain thought they were going to lose the whole army. They thought that was going to be over. There was a lot at stake there. And so, this is from the Times. In the cities and towns, leaders of civic life attended church on this day of national prayer at the head of their people. From peaceful village churches in the remote countryside, the same prayers were offered. Just as in these fateful hours, the same thoughts are in people's minds. And then there was that amazing miracle of Dunkirk, even as it's known today, where Britain originally thought, well, if we're lucky, maybe we can get 50,000 men off those beaches. And they ended up rescuing over 300,000 British and French soldiers from those beaches. And today, we don't call that a miracle for God. In fact, Dover Castle is where the evacuation from Dunkirk was planned. And on their website, they say Vice Admiral Bertram Ramsay, who organized this, who organized the operation, Bertram Ramsay pulled off a miracle. So what happened at Dunkirk? It was a miracle, but it was a man that did that miracle. That's what we say today. I visited it a few years ago. That's pretty much word for word what the tour guide said as well. That man performed a miracle. And you just read the newspapers from the time, and it's so different. The Telegraph talking about... This is from the Telegraph. One can be certain about tomorrow's Thanksgiving in our churches. From none will the thanks ascend with greater sincerity or deeper further than from the officers and men who've seen the hand of God. The Telegraph, saying, "We saw the hand of God, powerful to save, delivering from the hand of a mighty foe, who, humanly speaking, had them utterly at his mercy." Time Magazine, again, Time Magazine had an article talking about how it was a miracle. And so the nation had a day of thanksgiving after that. The Times Magazine talks about how they received a very large number of letters in support of holding a day of thanksgiving. And so they did on June 9th. They had a day of thanksgiving. I have an article up on the website on the blog section called Happy Black Friday that goes into this in more detail, but talks about how in November 5th for Britain back in the early 17th century was a day of thanksgiving. But it was that was a Thanksgiving day before even the harvest in Plymouth, etc. But it didn't stick, and we've just so comprehensively forgotten this history. But if we just go back to that history, there's so much we can learn. Mr. Robert Morley, had an article, "The Inspiring History Britain Could Never Forget." Just that history of 70 years ago has so much to teach us about how to solve these problems. Another great article to read just on this subject of these days and prayer and thanksgiving is one called "Is God Answering America's Prayers?" from the latest but one Trumpet edition of the magazine. Mr. Gerald Flurry's article from that. We had it up on our website yesterday as the main feature. I think you can still find that relatively easily now. So that's about all I've got time for. There's plenty of others you can go and read on that and read about everything that we've covered on today's show. Thank you for joining me. Please keep sending your feedback to td@kpcg.fm, and we look forward to joining you again next week.